didn't raise the traditional VC funding, so we are not worried about growth at all costs. We are very focused on long-term profitability. We want to do right by our customers. We want to give the best possible customer experience so that people actually want to keep using our product.
Investors and other people might want you to grow at all costs, but is that good for your brand and customer experience in the long run? Are you able to establish a great business if you sacrifice profit? Long-term growth is often overlooked by many, but Amanda Natividad has something else to say about marketing your D2C brand. She believes that the best thing for a brand is to focus on the long term with SEO and influence marketing. In today's episode, Amanda breaks down exactly how you can do this for yourself. Welcome to How to Market Your D2C Brand, a show where we interview founders and marketers in the D2C space to learn about how they have grown their brands and current best practices in marketing. This show is brought to you by Goodo Studios, a photo and video creation studio that works with consumer brands to make the content that converts viewers into customers. I am your host, Matthew Gattozzi. Today's guest is Amanda Natividad, marketing architect at Spark Toro. If you follow Amanda's work, you know she talks a lot about long-term growth versus short-term growth as a brand. I wanted to start off the interview with asking if D2C companies are too reliant on Google and Facebook ads.
I think where this starts is, you know, running advertising on Facebook and Google. And when I say Facebook, that's inclusive of Instagram, right? It's the new direct response marketing, right? Where you can very quickly attribute your return on ad spend or your ROAS. So intuitively, it makes sense that a lot of marketers or marketing teams would put most of their dollars there, right? You put in your money, you know more or less how it's performing, like within the same day, you can decide whether or not to increase spend, whatever it is that you need to do. So that makes sense to me. But the problem here is that I think marketers, especially in the DTC space, have become too reliant on this, right? Where they're like, great, need to bring in new customers. Let's run some ads. Got it. And I think now we're seeing this problem of, you know, ad spend is up, right? Like per cost per ad or cost per click is up this year compared to last year. We're seeing the end of what third-party cookie data in the next year or two. And marketers are overall struggling with last click attribution. And all of these things are such that, and then with the way that Google and Facebook are running their platforms, they're basically cornering marketers into giving them more money and giving them less transparency, right? And I think people who are really in the weeds here, which I haven't been in about a year or so, people who are really in the weeds of, you know, direct response marketing, they know this super well. They know this better than I do. But the last time I was running a lot of these ads, you know, we were struggling with specifically how to optimize new kinds of ad sets. And we would talk to our, you know, Google representative who was like, yep, just let us know, you know, if we increase spend here, you know, we'll get you your return ad spend. And we're like, but how does that work? And they're like, oh, you know, in our system, it knows it's dynamic and it's automatic and all these things that don't really give marketers much information. Those things are, to me, in my opinion, kind of dangerous, right? Because you're giving your money to these, you know, essentially monopolies or duopolies who have no incentive to really give you more information because they have your money. If anything, they're incentivized to continue to give you less information so that you give them more money. So I think that's a real problem. And I think that also comes from this sort of VC landscape where, you know, you as a marketer, or not marketer, sorry, startups, you know, are raising funding from VCs, encouraged to grow their companies. But sometimes marketers are forced to make this trade-off of growing at a faster clip rather than focusing on profitability.
Something that I appreciate about your work and how you see marketing is you talk about How can we get other sources of influence? And ultimately, that's going to drive kind of that lasting impression, you know, longer customer lifetime values and things like that. So if it's not Google and Facebook ads, which I think absolutely agree, you got to diversify. You can't rely on these two major players. How else do companies, how else should they be finding places of influence to not only get new business, but even returning business?
Yeah. And I'm glad that you are calling out sources of influence. I mean, that is something that, you know, we at SparkToro, where I work now, we're an audience research startup, that we've been, you know, really trying to home in on the right messaging here. So sources of influence. As I think about all this, I really think it comes down to what are your long-term plays in marketing? And long-term plays, I don't mean like it has to be 1 year from now or 2 years from now. I just mean like maybe the things that will not show you your positive return on ROI within a week. Maybe it's like a month or a couple months. Focusing on these long-term plays. And these long-term plays might be things like PR, content marketing, sponsorships, or like, I don't know what to call this other than like it, advertising, but not on the Duopoly platforms, like podcast advertising, newsletter advertising, maybe even magazine ads. I think those things, magazine ads still work. People may not like to admit that, but it's true. And community building, like these are all kind of long-term plays, right? And I think when you tap into your sources of influence, those are the things, or those sources of influence are the things that power your long-term strategy. What does that mean? So finding a source of influence would be things like, let's say you wanted to consider doing a couple of podcast sponsorships. Which podcasts would you find, right? If you know, taking the example of your coffee company, right? Like, because you, Matthew, are a coffee expert, you might already know what podcasts your audience might listen to. But not everybody knows, right? Especially if you're a new marketer, you're in a new niche, new industry. Those things are not really intuitive. And sometimes those things just come from having a deep understanding of a given kind of media. Like, maybe you need to be a coffee expert to know which podcast to choose. Maybe you need to be a podcast expert, like somebody who works in the podcasting space. So anyway, how would you find that? By being an expert. That's not very scalable. But with a tool like SparkToro, you can run searches to find the answers to this. Like what you can do is you can do a search on SparkToro for like my audience follows the social account, and you can plug in the social account of maybe a popular coffee influencer or coffee expert. And then from there, you can kind of dig a little bit deeper and you can find, okay, for people who follow this coffee expert, what websites do they frequent? What podcasts do they listen to? What YouTube channels do they subscribe to? Those are the things that you can find in SparkToro, which help you uncover your sources of influence.
What's some advice you would give to companies, internal marketing teams that are using, you know, SparkToro, let's say, to actually accomplish getting some of these sponsorships or partnerships with maybe influencers to magazines and everything else in between?
One thing that one of our customers did that was very clever was they wanted to get mentioned in a specific publication. It was not this publication, but for the sake of examples, let's say it was New York Times Health. What they did was they did a search for, you know, my audience follows or frequently visits the website New York Times Health. And then from there, they looked at the SparkToro text insights and they saw, oh, like the people who follow this website, they frequently talk about blood pressure, older adults, those sorts of things. And then they went to the publication, they went to New York Times Health, you know, read the website, right? We read the content and ultimately pitched them on, hey, you know, we noticed that people who follow your publication tend to talk about, you know, blood pressure and whatnot. And we noticed that you haven't covered this stuff in a while. We'd love to pitch you on this story in which, you know, our product directly delivers on this solution for blood pressure or whatever that is. And that's a nice way to give a publication more data-driven insights into why they should write about you. So that's one idea, specifically for like PR or earned media outreach. And the other thing I would say is that this is, you know, my opinion. I really think that for things like cold outreach, you just have to put in the work. Like I know that we want to figure out how to do things most efficiently, things that scale, because we want to do them, you know, fast, efficiently, and get results, you know, pretty quickly. But I think when you do these things right, you have to just kind of take your time. And the other way I look at it is, if you are reaching out to a complete stranger, someone who has no vested interest in talking about you or working with you, what makes you think that they owe you their time? Right? It's like, if...
I mean, yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, that sounds so like kind of strange, maybe kind of basic to say, but I think anybody who's done cold outreach at any point in time, myself included, has done the whole like, what's your email? Da-da-da-da-da, here's my pitch. Whoop. You know, like, that's not really how you should be sending pitches. It should be, you know, once you find the people that you want to reach out to, do a little bit of intel on them, right? And by intel, I mean like read their website, their blog, look at their tweets, see what's top of mind for them. And then just kind of try to live in their world for a couple minutes and understand what their pain points are, what things they're interested in. And then think of how your product, your service, your solution, your idea fits into their world. And I think you'd just be better, a lot better off doing it that way. And then if nothing else, you can use the opportunity to send them some fan mail, right? Like maybe it's like a podcast you really admire that you do want to sponsor, and you can, maybe your first outreach is, hey, I love your podcast. It really changed my outlook on the way that I see my work. Your episode about this made me decide to find a new job, and now I'm really happy. And it's all because you helped me, you served as the catalyst to help me do that. Like something genuine, right? You need to have something genuine, and then, you know, you can do your pitch as long as it, you know, aligns with their goals, or you think it aligns with their goals.
What I love about Amanda's approach on marketing is long-term growth that is sustainable. Something that takes a long time but is powerful for brands is search engine optimization. Not many people are talking about SEO within the DTC space, so I wanted to know, what does SEO look like for a consumer brand, and how would a company architect a successful SEO strategy?
I love this question because I love the notion of looking at SEO and content as this long-term play. The way I see it is, in especially in a direct-to-consumer company, there is usually a big opportunity in content. Right. And so the way I would, so maybe I would start it from just the very beginning, high level. Here's what you need to know about SEO. So I would say most companies should probably just go ahead and hire an SEO and content creation agency. Like, I think you should just do that. Right. Because a lot of the things that go into SEO require, it just requires a lot of work. And usually the in-house marketer doesn't have time to do all that work. And then there's also just, I think leadership tends to struggle in hiring full-time SEOs because no one really knows what it is, right? Like, not really. Like, people know, of course, search engine optimization. It's important. It means optimizing your website for, yes, people get that part. But when it comes to hiring, I think hiring managers become quickly aware that there are different kinds of SEOs to hire. You can hire a very technical SEO to make sure your website's set up correctly. You can hire an SEO who specializes in PDP, in product detail pages, where they are optimizing your catalog and your store. Then there are also SEOs who have a more sort of blog focus, content creation, that kind of thing. Those, and I mean, I'm sure there are SEOs who have all the expertise, I'm sure of it, but I don't know a lot of them personally. I tend to know more specialized SEOs. So I think in the case of a direct-to-consumer company, they're probably best off hiring the kind of SEO who knows how to run a blog and do it well. Because for a D2C company, basically what you want to do is grow the amount of people who come to your website organically, right? Like, you want to dominate search terms. Maybe if you're a coffee company, you want to dominate the search terms of how to make Chemex coffee, how to make AeroPress coffee. Maybe, I don't know, right? But that would theoretically be the opportunity for you as a brand to dominate those search terms. People come to your blog and they go, oh, wow, this is actually a coffee company's blog. Now I'm going to go check out their store. That's kind of a natural path for SEO and D2C. And then to actually do that in practice, let's say you are starting from scratch, you don't have a lot of resources. I would say there are a lot of really good, like actually good free resources from SEOs. There's a lot of content on Ahrefs' blog, on the Moz blog, from Backlinko. Aleta Solis has great content. And then the previous company I worked for, which was an SEO and content agency, Growth Machine, they have a great email course. It's a free like 7-day course on fundamentals of SEO. And it walks you through everything from setting up your website to doing your initial keyword research strategy and then executing on that. So then I would say, set up your website. I mean, you can use kind of anything, but set it up with a managed host. Personally, I use WP Engine, hosted on WordPress. I think it's easy. Other people use Webflow, Shopify blogs. Those are great. And then I would say, you know, dig into Ahrefs, a keyword research tool like that. I think Ahrefs does a 7-day free trial. So I would say get the most out of the free trial if you're not sure about spending more. But then that's where you can find the keywords that are related to your niche. And I think Ahrefs does a pretty good job of, like, their tool is pretty intuitive. I don't think you need to be a hardcore SEO to get value out of it. And then you can figure out, like, I would prioritize by high volume keywords and relatively low difficulty to rank for them. So what is high volume? I would say around 500 searches per month, around there. And then low difficulty, anything, I mean, as low as possible. Anything under 10, super easy, that should be great. I would prioritize with that. So that is a combination of keywords or topics that you know people are looking for, that you can easily rank for. Perfect. And then just keep going after it, right? The content that delivers on those search terms. And then I would use a tool like ClearScope to help you optimize the actual content. And ClearScope is basically an AI tool that it looks at the top ranking pages for that topic that you are writing on, and it helps give you insights on your own article, like your own written piece, to ensure that you are hitting on similar topics so that you can outrank competition. I've had really good success with using ClearScope, and you know, it's a great tool and the people there are really cool. So yeah, I would do that. And then, you know, just commit to a cadence of publishing. I don't know, you know, whatever you can manage, but I think twice a week is good. Assuming that you have a niche where, for which you have like a couple hundred topics or 100 topics or so to rank for. And then go from there. Usually, you know, people say takes about 6 months to see true results from your SEO efforts. I think that's probably true, but I think, you know, in as little time as like a couple months, 2 to 3 months, you can probably start to see some kind of measurable outcome where you can start to see whether you're on the right track or doing terribly or whatever that is. But yeah. And that's why I would say, like, also it's a good idea to work with an agency like Growth Machine because they've done it before. They can help you, you know, track that long-term success. And I think if I were to run a D2C blog today, I would hire Growth Machine to run that sort of content. And then I, as the in-house sort of manager, would look to, how can I then take this content and use it throughout the rest of my marketing strategy? So that's the other thing. So I know I'm just like rambling and riffing.
This is great. This is awesome.
But yeah, so like, I think not every company knows how to hire SEO. They don't really know how to do that. But then the ones who do, what I see a lot is that they're not using that content anywhere else. Like, there are some D2C brands who I have seen have a really great blog. Like, and by great blog, I mean like there's a keyword focused strategy. The content is, it's really good quality. And then I'll sign up for their newsletter because I'm like, cool, I want to see this. But then they use that newsletter to blast deals like twice a week. I hate that. I think that is just not the way to lean into long-term profitability. It's still kind of in that growth hacky sort of realm. And then that, I mean, I think taking that focus also then just trains your customers to think like, oh, I'll just wait for the next deal. I'm never going to buy your stuff full price. I'll just wait until Monday because you always have coupons on Mondays or you know, whatever that is. That's where I think there's a real opportunity to repurpose that content that you're already paying for on your blog. I'm not saying that that means that you have to blast out every single blog post in your email list. It's more about like, how can you be strategic about that content? Like, all right, let's go back to the coffee company example. So let's say you have all this great content on how to make Chemex coffee, AeroPress coffee, how to DIY drip coffee on a camping trip, like whatever. They're basically all just different ways to make coffee. Then you could do a roundup on like 10 ways to make coffee when you only have 10 minutes of your day. Like things like that, that's like roundup content, repurposing. You can then look at top performing content, see what else you can do with that. Like maybe you end up seeing, oh, people in my audience tend to really love camping and making coffee out in the woods. Like that's kind of interesting and very niche. And then maybe you create more content on that. Maybe you create an ebook that's like, hey, download this PDF and then, I don't know, bring it on your next camping trip. But you know what I mean? It's like getting more out of the content you're already paying for. Because that's the thing too, where I'm like, I know that this company has a great blog and I know they have freelancers. They're probably spending a couple hundred dollars on each article and then they're not using it and the rest of their marketing. Like, are you kidding me? Such a huge opportunity.
Amanda mentioned Growth Machine a lot, and Growth Machine is an SEO agency based in Austin, Texas. While she was working there, they helped an alcohol brand with their SEO strategy. I wanted Amanda to dive into more details so us listeners can hear more tactics about SEO.
This is a really good example of a D2C company that is niche. So I can't say the name, but it's an alcoholic beverage company that's sort of in the healthy niche. So that already is like, wait, alcohol and healthy? They would never say this messaging, I'm sure, but I'm not mentioning them and I don't work there. So I can say, we'll just call it healthy alcoholic beverage. That's just what we'll call it for the sake of this conversation. So that's already a niche, right? So it's people who like to drink alcoholic beverages who are health conscious. There is that. And so with that, we were able to focus on keywords and content that kind of spoke to that kind of audience. So like the audience that is, you know, maybe drinking alcohol at home, but it's kind of health conscious. Like, what are the things they're thinking about? We you know, built a keyword and content strategy around that. And the thing that really moved the needle was these sort of these long tail keywords, these sort of conversion focused keywords that don't have high search volume, but signal high intent from the reader. So the article that we wrote for them that performed really well was about a key ingredient that is in most alcoholic beverages and the absence of that key ingredient. So like, what if you were to have beer that was sugar-free, like something kind of like that, right? And then we wrote this article about it. Like, what does this ingredient do to you? Why is it bad? Why is it not so bad? Like, you know, just a thorough article on everything someone would need to know about the health implications of that ingredient. And that was that. It didn't even say like, now buy our product. It was just the information itself. And then from there, people, like readers, would just go on to click throughout their website and purchase. And just through Google Analytics, we were able to see that that yielded how much money? I forgot offhand. Over $5,000 in about 5 months. So, and that's all just from the organic traffic. That wasn't from any marketing to that blog post. It was just people who happened to stumble upon it by way of Googling the topic.
You did mention that most companies should just hire an SEO agency. And you've written a post about kind of some red flags on what you should or should not do when it comes to hiring a marketing agency. And I think for a direct-to-consumer brand, it's very valuable to have, you know, different players within marketing to outsource that. But I'd love to hear more if you could give people advice, you know, a founder that's, hey, I'm growing, I need help. What are some things that people should be looking for or watching out for when they're hiring an agency, not even just SEO, but just in general?
Yeah. So I mean, fortunately for everyone listening, I've made a lot of mistakes here. So I have a lot of learnings. The things that I think really hold up now over time are the red flags to me are the first one is really agencies who say they can do it all. So if you are looking to hire, you know, a PPC agency, and then you're working together and you're like, oh, actually I need someone to run the blog too. And they go, oh, we can do that. Oh, we can do that. Oh, we can do your PR too. That's when I'm like, I don't think you can. and I think because like the best agencies start from some form of specialization, right? Like, I mean, I think it's like Ogilvy, like they were best known for consumer insights. You know, now they are a huge agency and like they're, you know, they're one of the legacy ones. They are many years old. So like, I get it. Now they're just a bigger agency, but they did have that. They started out with that strong focus on consumer insights. Weber Shandwick, that's also a global PR firm, but they were best known for crisis management. Also pretty niche. So that's where I just think, like, if you meet a marketing agency who says they can just do all of it for you, that's when I'm like, I just don't think you can. I think you can do one or two things really, really, really well. And then what you probably did was you use your reputation in those things to establish credibility in other things that are completely unrelated. So just when I've hired agencies for a certain focus and then ended up contracting them to do some other things, the other things were things they were not very good at. So I would say look for specialists. I think that's just the way to go.
Before you jump into the next point, I can speak as an agency owner myself. When I first started, I did do that. And that was like unfortunate because A, it was draining. I was doing things and taking jobs that didn't align with, I do photos and videos. But it wasn't until I was like, I'm not going to do social media management. I'm not buying ads. I'm just focusing on the content creation, the photos and the videos. That's all I do. And by saying no or saying this is my limit, I think that I know that that helps, but it also is like I am laser focused there. So I know I can give you the most in this space rather than I can give you okay in a lot of different areas. And that was hard to do, but I know speaking as an agency owner, I've made that mistake thinking, oh, if I expand my, you know, services, I can get more money. It can be great. I can grow. But I think that hurts the agency and ultimately it hurts the client, which is who you're supposed to be helping. So I think that's a really great red flag I've learned myself. I'm course correcting, but I think that's a great, great red flag. What are some other red flags for you?
I want to stay on that for a second because I think you brought up a really, really good point. One, back to our theme of long-term profitability over growth. Like, yes, if you just decide to expand your suite of offerings and go, yeah, I can do that, you might grow faster. But like a year from now, how happy are your customers going to be? Are they going to be thrilled that you do all the things? Probably not. And then also, I appreciate your perspective from the agency side, where it probably sucks or hurts at first to turn down a client, but you're doing everyone a favor, yourself included. Like, you're not setting yourself up for terrible for expectations you can't meet. And I think for any client, you know, any client who is putting out an RFP to agencies, clients are happy to be able to disqualify agencies. And that doesn't mean like, good, we don't like you. It's perfect. This isn't a good fit. Thank you for telling me. Like, I think it's a relief for people to hear like, oh, there's a really good reason that this is not a good fit. It has nothing to do with like me or you liking the other person personally. It's not that. It's a, oh, okay, you fundamentally don't have this thing that we need. Totally fair. And then, you know, as a person, like as a client facing person, like that makes, or as the client, that makes me think, awesome. Now I really appreciate this agency's honesty, and I want to like take note of them so that I can recommend them to someone else who is a fit. Because then I think the more that you self-select, the more you can kind of help yourself and help people recommend you, because people will know who you're for and why. I had one other red flag I wanted to talk about that I think is important. It's referring to proprietary key metrics, or referring to proprietary key performance metrics. That is a mouthful, and that is a weird thing that I have seen numerous times throughout PR and content agencies, where they will say like, "Oh, based on our you know software, we've seen that we've lifted impressions by 9,000%. Like something, they'll say something strange like that, or like, "Oh, we've generated 45 billion impressions." And I'm like, "Where are you getting these weird numbers?" And I've asked, I'm like, "Where are you getting these numbers?" And they've said, "Oh, it's in our software." And I'm like, "What software is this?" And they're like, "It's in our proprietary software. We have our own homegrown, you know, metrics." And I'm like, "What is that?" And so like that has always been a huge red flag to me, because it's like, if you're telling me you have this like data, but you won't tell me where it's from, that's a big problem. And when I encountered this with a PR firm, after a lot of digging, they eventually admitted that the metrics came from Cision, which is a pretty commonly used PR software, which is fine, right? Could have just said Cision, not made me dig in through, go back and forth with like 10 emails and like awkward meetings. But then at the same time, that also uncovered that the magazine circulation number that they were touting was like a 5-year-old metric. So then I was like, so you didn't really generate like 5 million impressions. You called out a circulation number from 5 years ago, and you're assuming that that same number of people all read this article that you placed for us. Like, that's a little bit shady. So that's the kind of thing that I would watch out for. So like, if they can say, you know, "Oh, through Google Analytics, we saw this," or "In Ahrefs, we saw this," like, great.
To finish off the interview, we'd like to do some quick fire questions. So let's just jump right on in. What is a tech company in the e-commerce space that you're a fan of lately, not SparkToro, but that you're a fan of lately that you feel like has benefited people as they use it for their stores and things like that?
I have to say ShipBob. I truly mean it. I worked there for a hot second before I joined SparkToro. It's a great company. The thing that I think is super exciting about them is that they are democratizing small businesses for everybody. They're lowering the barriers to entry. And I think it's fascinating that their biggest competitor is the entrepreneurs themselves, the people who are picking, packing, and shipping boxes out of their garage. And I think they're solving really interesting problems, really important problems in the e-commerce space, and they're a great company.
So what is a direct-to-consumer brand that you think is awesome?
The brand that I love is called Early Bird. Have you heard of it?
No. What is it?
I don't think anyone has. I have a feeling. Ooh,
I love this.
Yeah.
I love that you're giving me an unknown. Hopefully to be known, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I have a feeling that they have grown their business basically entirely through word of mouth. So they do a morning cocktail. It's not alcohol, but they call themselves a morning cocktail. It's like a little powder. You mix it with water, shake it up in a little jar, leave, you know, put it on your nightstand overnight, whatever, drink it in the morning. It's delicious. It tastes like a little orange, like mimosa thing. And the ingredients are really interesting to me. It's all like nootropics and a little bit of caffeine. The caffeine comes from green coffee bean extract. I think each serving of Early Bird has maybe about the same amount of caffeine as one cup of coffee. So it's not a ton. It also has ingredients like ashwagandha extract and L-theanine. So the whole thing is that when you drink it, you just feel a little bit better. Like it just kind of clears the morning brain fog. And it works. Like it is delicious. I feel more awake in the morning. I feel less like a jerk in the mornings because I'm not a morning person. And if you go to their website, the website is clubearlybird.com. It's not anything fancy. They don't have an SEO strategy. I've never seen a Facebook ad. So I'm just like, how did they grow this company? And I'm on their email list. I read all their emails for some reason. Like they do this thing, I think every week, where it's like they break down a morning routine of someone famous. I don't care about this stuff usually, but for some reason I can't stop reading it. They know their niche. I don't know. And they do these limited edition product drops where it'll be the same product but different flavor. Like recently they had guava colada and it was like limited edition, first 1,000 tubs, then it's gone forever. And it's true. Like I did their first one too, which was like a blue raspberry, which if you like blue Gatorade, it's kind of like that. It's delicious. But I bought it and they actually did do away with it. Like you can't buy that one anymore. So I'm fascinated by that. They use SMS messaging or SMS marketing. It's incredible.
I finish off the podcast with a segment called Open Mic. This is a chance for my guests to share anything they want to share. A lot of times I feel like people get stuck behind the industry they are in, but we are all human and we all have other interests outside of that. So this is a space for my guests to say whatever they want to say.
I am going to talk about SparkToro, shameless plug for the company I work for right now. We are essentially creating a new category in the marketing space. We are creating this notion of identifying sources of influence, doing influence marketing, no R, not influencer, influence marketing, which is finding the sources of influence and marketing through them, with them, to them. It's like finding the influential podcasts, finding the niche social media accounts that are relevant to you and your service, helping you do the things that good marketers are already doing, that they have, you know, spent years building up credibility in a certain industry or topic or like area of expertise and doing that well. It's helping you do those things. And we kind of struggle with the terminology because there isn't really a known term for that yet. So we are hanging our hats on audience research. We help you do audience research to make your marketing a lot better. And I'm calling this out and SparkToro out, not just because I work there, but because I think we really are an interesting company. We didn't raise the traditional VC funding, so we are not worried about growth at all costs. We are very focused on long-term profitability. We want to do right by our customers. We want to give the best possible customer experience so that people actually want to keep using our product. We remind you when your next... when your card's going to get billed again. And we say like, and I think our email is even like, hey, we're not sure if you still want this. You can cancel it. Like here's a link to cancel it if you don't want this, no problem. And people will write into us and say, thank you so much. I love this email. And we just really, truly believe in doing the right thing for our customers and really helping them to do better marketing. That's our agenda.
This conversation with Amanda helped me see the power of SEO for brands, as well as understanding influence marketing, a category SparkToro is pioneering. You can follow Amanda on Twitter at AmandaNat, N-A-T. We will also put more information about SparkToro, Growth Machine, and all the other resources she mentioned, which will be linked in the show notes. Thank you, Amanda, for being on the show. If you like the show, drop a rating on Apple Podcasts or your podcast listening app. And if you really love this show, please share this episode with a friend, and thank you in advance.